This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about a boogie woogie, and I'm going to play one.
I'm Steve Vinson.
I'm Paul Schultz.
And this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Sit back, relax, and ignore the news. Nothing you're about to hear is true.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm in this beautiful conference room. I feel like whenever I talk about where I work, it's sort of like undisclosed, right? I'm here at undisclosed Big Pharma.
That's right.
In a conference room overlooking a beautiful, some trees. Maybe I'll take a selfie later and I'll put the view from my office today. While I'm sipping on my asparagus tea and eating my kombucha milkshake.
Wasn't that a Beck album? Kombucha milkshake.
Kombucha is this thing. Kombucha, whatever. It's this carbonated natural something or other that all the hipsters are drinking now.
Yeah.
But it's jumped the shark because they have it in Target.
Used to be Walmart. Now it's Target.
Yeah.
A trend to jump the shark.
Yeah. So we had a pretty good series. The last two episodes were about side hustles.
Mm-hmm.
And they got kind of serious. And in fact, it's weird because I just listened to the latest, which hasn't even been published yet, but it will be tonight. And I was like, wait a minute, this blog post that I started about a brief history of my financial woes and what I'm going to do about it. I really don't need to write it now. All I need to do is transcribe last week's episode or this week's episode. Cause it basically says everything I wanted to say. I'd just forgotten that I had already said all of it.
Right. Right. And the whole time you're talking about getting a side hustle going, I'm just like, SMH. And then you realize, wait a minute, this other podcast is,
well, the thing that I had forgotten about that you said toward the end is super critical for everybody. So you got to listen to the end because Paul makes an extremely important point, and it's one that I've got to remember.
I was due,
and I had forgotten it, but now that I re-listened to the episode, I've remembered it, and I'm going to apply it. And it is, when you're trying to learn something new, you have to forget what you already know.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
That's not to say you don't build upon previous knowledge, but you got to go, I'm trying to learn something new. I can't try to overlay it on top of what I already know.
Mm-hmm.
I need to kind of come at it with a fresh perspective. And I think that's the problem I've had with the podcast and making money off the podcast is I've been trying to overlay it on everything I already know about making money and podcasts. And what, by the way, I had this conversation. We're going to talk about Stephen Hawking in a minute, but first, and we're also going to talk about the Halloween episode and Black Lightning. But first, I had this conversation last night with my wife, and it was everybody right now is saying, first of all, podcast is becoming more and more of a thing. I think you and I were early on the podcast train. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are podcasts that have been out for 12, 13 years. So I'm not saying we were pioneers, but by
no means, no.
When we started 4 years ago, there were still plenty of people who didn't know what podcasts were. Now, big companies like Target and Lenovo are starting to sponsor podcasts.
Yeah.
And every company is starting to get a podcast going.
I just saw a meme the other day that I strongly disagree with, and it said something to the effect of podcasts are the new lower back tattoo.
That's fine. I'll get a tramp stamp if it'll make me money.
That's right. It'll say don't panic.
Yeah, it'll say don't panic right across with the small of my back. Which, you know, when you're okay. This just turned into an X-rated podcast because I was thinking whoever would be reading that during whatever activity is going on, I'd be like, is there something you want to tell me?
No, I think I've told you everything you need to know.
Yeah, that's right. okay. So, but these big companies are starting to get into the podcast game, which tells me that podcasting right now is probably where Google AdWords were a few years back, which is people weren't sure, you know, the click per pay-per-click and all that stuff. People weren't sure, and it was really cheap to get in front of a whole lot of people because the big guys didn't understand it. Then once they understood it, now all the big guys are in it. It's really expensive to get Google clicks, you know. Same with Facebook ads. Facebook ads, you're starting to see politicians. You're starting to see, you know, regular, you know, big established companies. Because now they figured out, oh, Facebook ads, they're always a little bit late, right? So now that I'm starting to see them get into it, 3, 4, 5 years from now, if you have a podcast with some number of listeners or a good guest list, these companies, it's not going to be like Fly By Night Incorporated sponsoring podcasts. It's going to be big companies that have huge ad budgets, you know?
Yeah.
And so one of the things the pundits are saying right now, and pundits are always wrong, is they're going, oh, yeah, you should start a podcast. It's like blogging, but don't expect you're going to make any money at it. It's a means to another end, you know? And I said to my wife last night, I said, you know what? That might be true today, and it may have been true 5 years ago and up till now. I don't think that's going to be true in a few years. I think there'll be, like right now, there's probably half a dozen people who've gotten rich podcasting. And I'll bet the number that are making a living podcasting is probably less than 1,000. But I think a few years from now, there'll be a ton more people that got rich doing it. And there'll be way, way more people at least making a living doing it.
Yeah.
I just don't think people see how that can be right now. But they didn't see everything else that's happened either.
Right.
So so that's that. Now we're going to talk about Black Lightning. We're not going to talk about Black Lightning. We're going to talk about talking about Black Lightning. So two episodes into season two. I've seen episode one. You've seen episodes one and two.
Yes.
I think to do it justice, and this was your suggestion a minute ago, we should probably... once all the Halloween hoopla is over, go back and just, we'll be 3-4 episodes in by that point, and we can just do a mid-season recap.
That sounds like a plan to me.
All right. So I promise we're going to talk about Halloween. We're going to talk about Stephen Hawking's new book. But first, I wanted to tell you about Black Lightning. I've tried this new thing that somebody told me about, which is you're always teasing the next story.
Yeah.
When you're announcing the news, right? So Peter Jennings taught me that.
So when you guys were hanging out?
Yeah, in Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan, hiding under the window was rocket RPGs were going by.
Yeah, Steve, RPG. So Halloween. So we've got the, if I understand you correctly, we've got the story that you, the radio play.
Yes.
Recorded, edited.
Yep.
Ready to go.
It's right? In the can.
In the can, as they say. So now we just need to record our jibber jabber and get that edited up, and then I think it'll be out in time for Halloween.
Fingers crossed. This is probably our most ambitious Halloween episode yet, and that probably sounds like a cliche to say, you know, like, what's your favorite movie that you've worked on? Well, the one I'm going to promote. But no, it's the undertaking to me just seemed like it was going to be massive, but thanks to some help of some very talented friends, it came together like that. It was so easy to do, time consuming, but easy to do, you know? So yeah. This is our most ambitious Halloween episode yet.
So exciting.
The hard work's over. Now it's just us being us.
I had another idea, which it's again, hard work for me. And I don't want to say what it is yet in case I decide not to do it.
Always a good idea.
But if I do it, it won't take much work on your end. It'll take me doing something out of my comfort zone. So
Don't panic. Back to
tattoo. Don't panic. Okay, so now I've got, I woke this morning and I walked into the library and I sat down as I do every morning to catch up on the issues of the day.
By library, you're of course referring to
the commode.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
And by catch up on the issues of the day, I mean check my Facebook feed.
Okay.
Somebody had posted, or maybe it was in Twitter. I think it was probably in Twitter. Stephen Hawking's last book came out, I guess, yesterday. It's called Stephen Hawking, My Brief History. And so I read about it. And, well, of course, the clickbait headline was Stephen Hawking says there's no God, which I'm sure that's a minor part of the book, but that's a way to get people to click on your link.
By the way, the article read, it seemed to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But a couple other things he mentions is that he believes within 100 years we'll be able to explore the entire solar system.
I don't think I'm going to make it that long.
And then he also said he believes it won't be long before AI, artificial intelligence, is smarter than humans. Which, I don't know, that's not a... It doesn't take Stephen Hawking to figure that one out, right?
Right.
It's like, good job, genius.
I read something somewhere where they could make an AI that could beat the world's greatest chess player, but yet the guy that made the AI can't beat the world's greatest chess player.
Yes.
That's kind of an indicative little
thing. Right. That leads me to my idea for the ultimate side hustle. And it's using AI, and I'll tell you about it in a minute. But first, the Stephen Hawking, My Brief History, from their website, it says, for the first time, and this is Stephen Hawking, hawking.org.uk. For the first time, Stephen Hawking turned his gaze inward for a revealing look at his own life and intellectual evolution. My Brief History recounts Stephen Hawking's improbable journey from his post-war London boyhood to his years of international acclaim and celebrity. Illustrated with rarely seen photographs, this concise, witty, and candid account introduces readers to the inquisitive schoolboy whose classmates nicknamed him Einstein. That's kind of an insult. The jokester who once placed a bet with a colleague over the existence of a black hole. Like, how do you win that bet? And the young husband and father striving to gain a foothold in the world of academia. Writing with humility and humor, Hawking opens up about the challenges that confronted him following his diagnosis of ALS, aged 21. Tracing his development as a thinker, he explains how the prospect of an early death urged him onward through numerous intellectual breakthroughs, and talks about the genesis of his masterpiece, A Brief History of Time, one of the iconic books of the 20th century. You know, I wonder about Stephen Hawking. Who's smarter, Stephen Hawking or Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Well, by now, by default, Tyson, but...
Yeah, since there's no God, I guess there's no Stephen. I'm anxious to read the book. His book, A Brief History of Time, I thought was great. A better book for me was The Universe and Dr. Einstein, because that's the one that really taught me, like... how the universe works.
So when you wake up in the morning, that's the first thing you turn to?
That's the first thing I turn to.
Kids come running in with all kinds of questions. You're like,
got the book. Read another chapter.
I'm not listening till I'm on page 52 or 42, as the case may be.
I got into an argument with a guy the other day about the number 42. And he's like, no, it's 43. And I was like, you do not want to have this debate with me. He's like, yeah, it was like Sheldon was trying to figure out how many blah blahs and whatever. And I go, look, I am not talking about that show that you just referenced. I am talking about the book.
That's anyway. Right.
So I don't know. I want to read it, but I... You know, in A Brief History of Time, he actually ends it with talking about there being a God and how advanced astrophysics is getting closer to proving it, right? So now, apparently, in this book, he wants to say that there is no God. I mean, which is it? Now he should know, right?
One way, yeah. He's got the answer to that one way or the other.
And the answer is, there is a God, but he was never on your side.
That's right.
So that doesn't interest me that much, because I don't know how you can say there is or isn't based on astrophysics. But I will say, I heard an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he was asked whether he was an atheist. And he said he's agnostic. Mm-hmm. And the guy said, well, how can you be an advanced theoretical astrophysicist and be agnostic and just not know? How can you say? He's like, okay, look. He's like, I will not go on record saying I'm an atheist. He said that word comes with too much attached to it.
Right.
But he said, I will tell you, if you look at, and whoever was asking him, it's like, well, what, you know, aren't more scientists atheists than not? And he said, well, it depends on the scientists. They've done surveys. And he said, among like doctors or, you know, the social sciences and all that, as many scientists believe in God as the general population.
Right.
Said, you get into chemistry, somewhat fewer. You get into biology, and now it starts to, you know, whittle down a little bit more. You get into physics, just general physics, it drops off, you know, tremendously.
Yeah.
So when you get into astrophysicists, something like less than 7% believe there's a God. And so I would imagine with Stephen Hawking, when he came out with his first book, it was probably like, I don't need to come out and say there's a God, but I can't possibly not, like, I can't say there's not a God.
Right.
It's 1990 whatever, for Christ's sake. pun intended. I can't say there's not a God, right? I'll get killed faster than ALS will kill me. Wow. It was a cruel joke. If there's not a God, somebody played on him. It's like, here's a brilliant brain.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a disease that probably will kill you, so don't worry about it. You'll be dead before you get sick of being in this wheelchair. He lives to be like 74 years old.
It's like, when am I going to die?
when am I going to die? And they gave him that voice simulator thing, and it has an American accent. I always forget he's British.
Yeah. Then when I never saw the movie about him. Because the movie, to me, maybe I'm not giving it a fair shot or whatever, but to me it looked like they were making some kind of, they're turning it into some kind of one of those, like, The Notebook kind of romance movies, you know, where Austin Powers gets, like, finds a woman. But, yeah, it took the actor to talk for me to go, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, he's not American.
We went from The Notebook to Austin Powers getting a woman.
Well, you know, it's the same.
I'm like, yeah, those are basically the same movie.
Just Nicholas Sparks wrote the fourth Austin Powers movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be a good movie. Oh, man. Austin Powers comes back to 2000. No, he travels forward in time to 2018. And he is dressed like an 80s dude, right? Like Miami Vice, right?
Oh, God.
He's got the Miami Vice thing going. He shows up in 2018, thinks that $1 billion is a lot of money, finds a married woman who is the daughter of somebody he dated back in the 80s. And they start to fall in love. So she leaves her husband, the poor guy, because you ever notice what she's dying, by the way, she's dying of ALS, as long as we're on the topic. And but she hasn't, she's asymptomatic so far, but she knows she's gonna die. And Austin Powers shows up, and what he doesn't realize until toward the end is she's his daughter, but he doesn't realize that until after they did it.
This is getting weird.
Change the channel, Marge.
Okay, so ALS, the movie, the Nicholas Sparks Austin Powers movie that you didn't see, but he's British. He is British indeed. Mm. But okay, so the other thing he's said is that, A, okay, I'm going to combine two ideas here.
You know what, though? Maybe they gave him, before you go on, maybe they gave him the American accent, because if it was like a British accent, could you imagine trying to understand that damn thing? Especially if he was real Cockney, you know? What if he was like one of these Cockney Brits, and it's just like, I can't even...
I can't do a British accent, but that would be so funny to do right now. I might.
I was going to say it's going to become Australian.
So. Good day, mate. Hello, love. He'd say things like love.
Mm.
They offered him an upgrade to that thing, and he probably would have sounded better, but he declined it because he would have had to learn a new way of doing it.
Mm.
And he's like, I don't have time for that. ain't nobody got time for that.
That was his other book he was working on. A Brief History of Not Having Time for That.
Seriously, though, why did they give him the Cancer Kazoo voice?
I don't know.
Did they just not have? I don't know. So the other thing he says is that we will be exploring the universe, or the solar system, within 100 years. The entire solar system, which I take to mean manned exploration.
I would hope so.
And then he also says that AI is... He's one of these guys, along with Bill Gates and some other celebrity smart dude, that they're afraid of AI because it's going to be smarter than us, and it's going to, you know, we're not going to be able to control it, basically.
Right.
Which I call bullshit on. These guys, Stephen Hawking, completely unimaginative. First of all, he's a theoretical astrophysicist. What does he know about AI, right? Just because you're smart in one field doesn't make you smart in another field.
But yeah, exactly. Right?
Microsoft dominated the personal computer business, right? But they didn't see the iPhone coming, and the whole smartphone concept just completely passed them by.
Yep.
Right? So just because you're dominant in one thing doesn't make you an expert in some other thing. So here's the thing with artificial intelligence. It takes people to program it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, there's artificial intelligence that can program its own stuff. Like if it needs something, it can go ahead and build it. But it's always still following the instructions of the person, right?
Yeah. The movies don't help either, because the thing about the movies is man never remembers to put a governor on the goddamn thing. So it's like, you know, you need a plug to pull.
Right. Right. Ultimately, you know, it's still... following our instructions, right? The thing that people are afraid of, and we'll get phone calls on this. People are going to call the Don't Panic hotline. and they're going to be like, "Well, yeah, but once it becomes self-aware, it starts building its own stuff and doing its own thing and all that stuff." And I'm like, "Yeah," and there will always be people building other AIs that know how to counteract that,
right?
You know, every technology gets the same treatment.
Yeah.
From so-called experts and imaginative people, where they go, well, we're not going to be able to control this. You know, it's whether it's nuclear weapons or steam engines.
What's the the line from, was it Fountainhead, about the first guy to invent to discover fire is probably burned at the stake?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, the thing that happens is... you know, people look at it and they go, yeah, this could create great good, but it could also be used for evil. It's like, of course, anything could be weaponized, right? So I'm not worried about AI. But I did have this idea. I was thinking, how does he propose that we're going to explore the entire solar system, you know, within 100 years, given that it takes, you know, it would take like a year just to travel to Mars, which is the closest one, right? Mm-hmm. How are we going to, unless we like colonize, are we, I don't know. So I'm trying to come up with these ideas, you know, it's like, you know, you'd have to have people who live on Mars and then go to the next closest one.
Yeah,
it'd take generations. I don't see how that happens in 100 years. 100. And then it hit me. I was like, well, wait a minute. Why can't we just use AI to figure that out? So there's this story, right? It's probably been a while, so they've probably done much more advanced things than this. But they took, you know, that game where you, I don't know if you ever played this game, where there's like this little horizontal bar and it hits this ball and it goes up and it breaks bricks. I think it's called Breakout or something.
Yeah, I think it is and Breakout.
You just got to keep that ball going and to, you know, kill as many bricks as you can, and then you go on to the next level and all that. Well, what they did is they gave the game to an artificial intelligence. And the only thing they said was the goal is to score the most points. You know, to score as many points as you can. That's the object of the game, right? They didn't tell it you need to break bricks. They didn't tell it you need to hit the ball. They didn't tell it anything.
Yeah.
No, nothing. Just score as many points as you can. And, of course, the first time it played, like, the ball just went, you know, like, it wasn't even close to hitting the ball. But within a few generations of the game, you know, just a few times playing it, it was now hitting the ball and breaking bricks, right? It wasn't even, like, a day before the thing had outscored the highest high score of anybody, right? And it was just, there was no end in sight. It just kept going, and it figured out, like, cheats, like, ways to get an even higher score faster than the designers of the game knew that you could do, right? So it figured out shit the designers of the game didn't even know. And so I thought, well, why not get a hold of an artificial intelligence and just give it a simulation of current, you know, of the laws of physics, right? At least based on what we know today. Just plug them all into the computer, build a model of the solar system based on the laws of physics, and tell it your only goal is to, you know, get humans to Pluto within 6 months of them leaving Earth, you know, and have them be able to survive.
Being on Pluto, drop them off dead, let them suffocate and freeze and die.
And have them return to Earth alive within a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just give it that problem. Don't tell it anything else. Don't tell it what current propulsion technologies we have. Just the laws of physics, right? And just set it loose and see what it does. And I was thinking, somebody has to be doing that already.
I'm sure there
Now I have a Google assignment to go figure out if somebody's doing that, because something really surprising might come out of it. It might say things like, well, we need to invent this other technology.
Yeah.
Or, based on the laws of physics, this type of fuel should exist, but it should exist on Venus based on the chemistry and physics you gave me.
Yes.
So step one is going to be we have to go to Venus to harvest this fuel to bring it back and whatever, you know. But it's going to come up with all these answers, right? And where it can't come up with an answer, it's going to have a question that maybe we give to another AI to go figure out the answer. Or we could just tell it, if you end up with a question that you can't answer, build another AI, you do it, to figure out the answer to that question while you're working on this other one. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the ultimate side hustle.
And that's probably ultimately how it's even going to happen. You know, I mean, we can think and we can do all the math in the world and invent all kinds of new math, but we're still limited, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like you said last week, we're limited by what we know. With an AI, you're only giving it a goal, and you're programming in some laws of nature, but that's it, you know? You're not telling it, here's how many pounds of fuel you need to get a rocket into orbit, and, you know, here's the flight path you would need to take to get to Pluto. You know, we're not telling it all that stuff we think we already know. We're just, and of course, the first 18 solutions it comes up with are going to be crap. Maybe the first 18,000 solutions are going to be crap.
but they'll be within the first hour and a half of its existence.
Exactly. And the way it's going to work, at least the way they're designed now, it even has a limitation, which is it's almost always a brute force approach, the way I understand it. So like the one that played Breakout, it did trial and error. You know, it's artificial intelligence for a reason. That's not how we figure problems out as humans, right? What we do is we look for patterns. Once we see a pattern, we apply that pattern, you know. But then eventually we're trial and error. But this particular AI was just kind of like brute force trial and error. I'll do this and see what happens. Well, I didn't get very many points. I better try something different. So it tries 100 different things until, oh, hey, I got a point. that's at least that I need to do again, you know, and then add something to that. And so the way they're thinking about AI these days is, well, how do we make it truly intelligent as opposed to just this brute force machine? And so it's recognizing patterns, it's applying those patterns and overlaying them on each other. And so that's probably how he came up with 100 years. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's famous. One of the famous axioms is that we underpredict the distant future and overpredict the near future.
Right.
So
right.
We think we'll be farther along in 5 years than we'll actually be. But we'll be way farther along in 100 years than we currently think we'll be.
Mm-hmm.
So he said 100. In his head, he's probably thinking, in his gigantic brain, inside his feeble body, he was probably thinking, oh, it'll probably be less than 100 years, but I'll say 100 because nobody would believe 25.
Right, right. I'll just pick a nice round number people are content with, and they can't really, yeah. you know, commit to it because it's like, well, I'll be dead within 100 years, so I can't go, you were wrong,
right.
you know.
Right. Yeah, not to mention that nobody alive today is going to find out whether I was wrong.
Right. I found, unless they, I think yeah. it was 3001, the Arthur C. Clarke, where the guy in 2001 that ends up floating out into space that Hal basically murders.
Yeah.
Spoiler. It turns out the conditions were right. He's frozen in time, and in the year 3001, we catch him and thaw him out, and when he gets to Earth, he's noticed that Earth is pretty well fucked. So we've built this huge ring around the Earth, and there's these like elevator shafts, if you will, that you can, you know, go up to this whole new world around the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, the dude couldn't wrap his head around it. He's just like, how could and you mean to tell me you built this in 1,000 years? Mm-hmm. It's been around before now, so it's sooner than 1,000 years. And his guide, the lady that was helping him, she goes, think about where man was 1,000 years prior to your existence.
Yeah,
and how far you came in 1,000 years. 1,000 years doesn't seem like a lot, but once the invention train gets going, it's kind of rapid. So
yeah, as long as you can keep from going through like a Dark Ages era, you know,
right,
where civilization basically falls apart and then you kind of go backwards for a little while. As long as you can avoid that, yeah, there's no reason it shouldn't be exponential.
Yeah, progress, and that was the gist of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So even though I think it's hopeful because even though Earth went to shit, they continued forward.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like the when Rome fell and the plague hit, you know, they kind of went backwards for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Or let's see, 1,400. Yeah, about 1,100 years. Civilization, at least in the Western civilization, went backwards.
Yeah.
In the meantime, the Aztecs and the Mayans, and well, not so much the Mayans, although they rose and fell, and then the Aztecs, you know, their civilization and the Incas, man, were thriving until the Spanish showed up.
Never trust a Spaniard.
It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I got to go off and read this book, and then I'll be obsessed with it for about a month.
We'll be doing a 2 or 3 part specials.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be telling my family all about the universe. Seriously, though, I just finished the episode part 2 of 4 on a series about Joan of Arc.
Mm-hmm.
Joan of Arc's one of the. By the way, I'm done talking about Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, about Stephen I think Hawking? We. There was one quick joke about. Years ago on The Simpsons when Homer, they found that crayon up in his head, you know, and they pulled it out and he got really smart. And he was sitting, Flanders was in his, like, kitchen. He's, like, doing things on his typewriter. And he holds up this, he's talking about all this cool stuff that he's discovered. And he goes, and here I was working on a flat tax and I accidentally discovered that there is no God. And Flanders is like, you won't be needing this. And he takes a piece of paper and sets it on fire.
That's funny.
Anyway.
So, maybe we'll talk about Joan of Arc in some future episode. Because I'll tell you what, man. She's one of those people that we all know about. Mm-hmm. You say Joan of Arc to anybody, they all go, oh, yeah, Joan of Arc, right? She was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Right? Everybody's like, oh, yeah, that she's that French woman that, I don't know, fought or something. But that's about it. Nobody really knows, including me, until recently, who she is.
I'm willing to bet you could hold up like a Rembrandt or whatever of like Lady Godiva and ask who this is, and most people would say, oh, that's Joan of Arc.
Ooh.
I don't think they could get it.
I sense a meme.
Well, get it in before this episode comes up.
Yeah, right? But yeah, it's something I was telling my family about it last night. It's like, you know, she was 13 when she got these visions that she was going to be the savior of the kingdom of France. And she didn't just go, oh, I must be crazy. No. She's like, oh, God talked to me and said, I'm going to be the savior of France. By the time she's 17, she's convinced the prince, the heir to the crown of France, that yes, she is going to be the savior of France, that God ordained it. She's got no military experience. She's a woman during a time when women weren't allowed to do anything other than cook and clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Split wood, tend to the animals.
Make babies.
Make babies. She's young, right? She's a peasant. Yet she convinces this prince that she's going to save France, and then she goes off and does it all before while she's a teenager. I was telling my kids about it, and I'm like, so I go, you could do anything. I mean, just don't let people tell you can't do stuff. If you have persistence and you set your mind to it, and you can just go off whatever you want to do in this world. And my oldest goes, all right, I'm going to get a fake ID and go work at McDonald's.
Well, keep us updated on how that's going.
I was like, wow, I just got done giving a speech about how you can do anything you want, and your plan, your grand plan, is to get a fake ID and work at McDonald's. Wow, you must really want to work at McDonald's. She's the Joan of Arc of fast food workers. I will deliver my people from the drudgery of making rotten hamburgers and salty french fries. Oh, man. Anyway, that having been said, do you have anything you want to have said?
Let's see. Joan of Arc does all that before she's 17, and I can't even get my kid to get the mail. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Sound like an old person.
All right. Well, in that case, for Stephen Hawking and for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vincent, and
nothing you just heard was true.
That's what we keep inside our minds. That's what we keep inside our minds. Just information. That's what we keep inside our heads.